Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, the world headquarters of common sense, for yet another glorious day of telling it like it is and cutting through the nonsense of the world we find ourselves in. Because don't forget, out there, you will find plenty of people telling you how awful it all is. You will find plenty of people telling you how not to look forward to Christmas. You'll find loads of people telling you it's all about Brexit, you know. The world has come to a complete end. It's all going to blow up in our faces and it's all our fault, apparently, here at Talk Radio and, of course, also in the Tory party. Once again, there's talk of dire consequences, empty shelves, jam-packed ports, catastrophic flooding. I mean, what is wrong with these people? Why is establishment Britain chock full of people who constantly want to warn everyone about terrible things that are about to happen to us? Since when did we become a country frightened of our own shadows? This morning, I will be once more assuring you that all that none of these mad theories will ever come true. Already we're hearing this morning that the deadlock that supposedly forced a couple of ports in Britain to turn away ships because they had no capacity to unload their goods has been fixed. So there's no need to worry that toys and electrical goods aren't going to be available for Christmas. But so what if they weren't? Maybe you could do something else. Maybe you could buy your kids some books. Maybe you could buy your kids a bicycle. Maybe you could buy your kids something else to have instead of a toy. Maybe instead of buying yourself the latest iPad, you can buy yourself something different. For heaven's sake. Meanwhile, of course, the European Union is preparing to surrender on Northern Ireland and give up their dream of custom checks forever on the soft border between the Republic and the North. So there's another reason to celebrate that. Up first this morning, we'll be taking the temperature of the nation with Andrew Bridget MP. If you've got questions for him, you know what to do. 03444991000. Ben Habib is here as well with his take on why the EU has finally seen sense, despite a promise not to surrender the right to invoke European court rulings if anything goes wrong. And Tonya Buxton is going to be with us in the studio with news from the front line of resistance against the ever-increasing governmental nonsense about masks, vaccines, control. When is it all going to end, was my question. 03444991000. Mike Yardley will bring us up to date on his situation. He's still recovering from a terrible reaction to the COVID jab, but he also brings us his thoughts on how we heal our divided nation. Because I think as we do get closer into the winter months and into Christmas, why not talk about why we should be more together than we should be separated? Plus, we'll be asking whether a court case involving spy cameras outside your neighbour's door could lead you to making a claim for compensation. Will Geddes will fill us in on that. And as ever, we need to hear from you out there in the big wide world. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? And what are you doing? Are the shelves empty? Are you panicking? Has life returned to normal? Have you got a full tank of petrol? Stop worrying, people. It's not a problem. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Welcome to the world headquarters of common sense. And I have to tell you that never before in the field of human conflict have we needed more common sense, because so many people now seem to be absolutely determined to frighten the bejesus out of you, to frighten the hell out of you, to tell you what you won't be able to buy, how you won't be able to go anywhere, why you won't be able to get a train, why you won't be able to buy a car, why you won't be able to do anything at all that you would like to do. Why? Because nobody's going to let you, and we're going to run out of absolutely everything. For heaven's sake, it's not the way things are. Let's talk to Andrew Bridging, Conservative MP for North West Leicestershire. Andrew, very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Now, I don't know about you, Andrew, but I'm very optimistic about Christmas. I'm very optimistic about what's coming up in the next few weeks. I'm not listening to these doom mongers who keep telling me we're going to run out of toilet roll and pasta and petrol and everything else. What's your take on it all?
Well, I've actually been to the supermarket early this morning to get a few items for the week, and the shelves are fully stocked. And
there's the thing.
You know, what a surprise, same as it was the last time I went a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, I keep reading these stories in newspapers about how we're running out of stuff, and I don't have... The last 2 days, I've been asking people to ring in to show me and tell me that they can't find various things in supermarkets, and not one person has, because they can't.
Well, I couldn't find anything I couldn't find. But I mean, I remember probably about 15 years ago being at the same supermarket, and there was a wild rumour going around that there was going to be a sugar shortage. And I only use about one bag of sugar a year in a bit of cooking.
Right.
And I went around the supermarkets, and everyone had bought 2 bags of sugar. And sure enough, when I got round to where the sugar was, and I didn't want to buy any anyway, there wasn't any, but everyone had got two years' supply in their shopping trolleys. And supply chains work on just-in-time, and that's for normal demand. If everyone goes out and buys an extra loaf of bread this morning that they don't need, that they'll throw in the bin in 3 days' time, we'll be out of bread this afternoon, no doubt.
Yes.
But the media love a crisis. It sells newspapers and it gets people watching the news. And I think the public are in a vulnerable psychological position. I think COVID has affected the national psyche, and it's probably made people more prone to this sort of scaremongering.
Yeah. I mean, I don't wish to particularly single out one particular newspaper, but on the front of one paper this morning, backlog at biggest port forces ships to turn away. Britain faces Christmas shortages, industry says. So I think the industries are not helping this matter either, because I see some quite greedy people when I look out there in the big wide world, because I reckon some of these industries have worked out, if you complain that you're under pressure because of the supply chain problems, the government's going to bail you out. And they're going to give you a loan so that you can continue to do business without having to spend any of your own money. And then we've got Britain faces catastrophic consequences of climate change, and we're going to have terrible catastrophic flooding, according to somebody called Emma Howard Boyd, who is some kind of environmental expert.
Well, I think one of the overplaying of the so-called climate emergency, I think it doesn't take into account the resilience and the innovative nature of the public and our scientists. We've faced lots of challenges historically. We're still here, and we'll get through this. But I mean, the fact that you read statistics that say that a third of under 16s are lying in bed worrying that they've got no future because of this climate emergency. It's very, very irresponsible reporting, quite honestly. And again, it's all part of this. Everything has to be a crisis. It was the Brexit crisis, and then it's the COVID crisis, and now it's another crisis. They need to take responsibility, really, for the fear-mongering that they're putting out there. It's very, very disappointing. As I say, I think the public are generally post-COVID psychologically more vulnerable to this sort of scaremongering, and you could start a shortage scare about absolutely anything. It's on the front of 2 newspapers.
Right, exactly right. And we seem to have moved away from the sort of the scaring about COVID into the scaring about other things, which worries me slightly and worries a lot of people who listen to this show and also who are guests on this show too. Because as we move into winter, we're already now starting to hear the noises about, whether we're going to be able to cope, whether the NHS is going to collapse, whether we're going to have too many cases of either flu or COVID, and, how are we going to handle it? I don't know when we became so kind of pessimistic.
Well, the fact is that given the level of vaccination in this country and boosters now going out to the vulnerable, if we can't cope in this country with COVID and learn to live with it, there is no hope for anybody else around the world, because we've got some of the highest vaccination rates that have been witnessed around the world. So there is no hope for anyone if we can't get through this. But again, it's the media jumping on absolutely everything. And your listeners might note that we actually had no deaths from flu whatsoever in the last 18 months. They've all been COVID. So well, now flu's coming. back, apparently.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not sure I'm fully on board with that scenario, because I think there may well have been people who died from flu, but apparently they didn't count as people dying from flu. They got counted as something else.
Indeed. So I think we're not being told everything, and a lot of what the public are being told is disinformation, quite honestly.
Yes.
We need to get on, keep calm and carry on, Mark.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. And whenever you come on this show, Andrew, people are always very dismissive. Well, not very many people, but some people are dismissive of how sort of blasé you are. But it's not about being blasé, in my view. It's about just being confident about the country we live in. It's about being confident that the government, no matter what they may have got wrong in the past, and we'll come on to that in a minute, you know, is certainly the best government for us to have right now, because we certainly wouldn't want Keir Starmer driving the lorry, would you?
Well, you wouldn't. Not the way he reversed into that bollard.
I mean, talk about Captain
Liability.
I mean, I thought he was supposed to be Captain Hindsight. He's not very good at looking in his rear view mirror, is he?
He wasn't very good at reversing. No. For Captain Hindsight, he was no good at reversing whatsoever.
No. So I mean, we are in a place, I think, which some people would say needs to be stewarded slightly better, though, by Boris Johnson. I've got absolutely no problem with him being away on holiday for a week. I think it's fine. He deserves a holiday. He's had a hard old time. You know, that's all fine and dandy. But is there not a case to be made where he should be being a bit more, shall we say, strategic and telling us a bit more and leading us a bit more, rather than sort of waiting for somebody to ask him a question about something that he should have already talked about?
I think the government have been completely blinkered by dealing with COVID. Mm. But anyone that thinks that because Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, is on holiday in Marbella, that his phone switched off, that is certainly not the case. He'll be briefed every day about what's going on, and he'll be making decisions that would pass back to the government. But you are right. Now that we're coming out of the COVID situation, I think there has been a blinkered approach. I think there were very foreseeable problems on the horizon. I've been talking about the lorry driver issue for 6 years. Mm. It was quite satisfying to debate it with Anna Soubry on the media a couple of weeks ago. And when I went to government in 2015 and suggested, when we brought out the apprentice scheme, that we needed to get lorry drivers into that, mm, because we were 50,000 lorry drivers short in 2015. It was interesting that in the live debate, Anna Soubry was against me, and she passed me to, she was the business minister at the time that I went to, she passed me to Nick Bowles, another Remainer, yeah, who was in charge of apprenticeships, and they said, no, we'll just we'll just keep bringing them in from the European Union. Well, that didn't go so well, did it? But I mean, we're now 100,000 lorry drivers short, but there are 120,000 lorry drivers short in Poland. That's because historically we've taken them all.
Yes.
And when I speak to lorry drivers, I mean, we're not actually short of lorry drivers. You know, we've got twice as many people who are qualified to drive lorries, obviously not including Keir Starmer, who's not qualified to drive a lorry. He demonstrated that.
What is he qualified? Is he qualified to do anything?
We're certainly not qualified to drive the country. So when I speak to them, there's twice as many qualified lorry drivers as are in the industry. They've all had a go, but they found themselves better jobs. And, I don't want to be crude, but when I speak to someone in their 50s who's a qualified lorry driver now working in a maintenance workshop as a mechanic instead, and he says, Andrew, I've done that, having to go to the toilet behind a hedge. I don't want to do that anymore.
Over the past month or so, Andrew, I've been talking to a lot of lorry drivers and a lot of people who were lorry drivers, and there's a lot of reasons why they're no longer doing it. Some of the reasoning is to do with the conditions, and I've seen pictures of some of the places they have to go to when they're waiting to pick up hauls, and it's horrendous looking. Some of it's due to HMRC, who have brought in this IR35 nonsense and said to them, you're going to have to pay a lot more tax if you're going to be pretending to be a freelance. Some of it's due to the DVLA, who still seem to be unable to produce a renewed driving licence for an HGV driver within 10 months. And some of it is due to the fact that, you know, they simply have got, as you say, fed up with it and they've found a better job.
Yes, I'm a qualified transport manager myself, and I've seen and a third of all the jobs in North West Leicester are distribution or logistics related, because we're in the very centre of the country. at the end of the day, it's a very, very responsible job. There's a lot of paperwork involved in it. There's a lot of compliance, obviously, with regulations, because, you know, we pay a doctor or a surgeon a lot of money because his hands are in your life when you're on that operating table, quite rightly. Well, when you're on the motorway and someone's driving an articulated lorry next to you, your life is in their hands as well. And that's a very responsible job. The lorry and the cargo could be worth hundreds of thousands of pounds. And I think they're worth more than £12 an hour.
Yes, I think that's right. And if Brexit and the Brexit dividend is to make sure that people are paid more money than they were before because there's no longer cheap European labour in this country, then surely that's a good thing. But should we have been more ready and more prepared to take this on before we kind of had a bit of a crisis?
We should have been, but I think the government's eye was taken off the ball by COVID. And obviously, we've had a recession due to COVID. We have a contraction of the economy due to the lockdown measures. And the spring back from that, what we're actually seeing now is the highest economic growth this country's ever had during my or your lifetime.
Yeah.
And those pains have put a lot of pressure on the system. In a way, it's a nice problem to have because, you know, already employment's back to levels that we saw before the pandemic. And there are huge opportunities out there for people who aren't in employment to move into employment because we've stopped the unlimited, unskilled migration from across the channel.
Right.
We're going to see part of the levelling up agenda is that we're going to see what were traditionally seen as undesirable blue-collar jobs are going to be remunerated at a better level because that's what the market decides their job's worth when you take away the constant influx of EU migrants.
Yeah, and isn't it funny that the so-called sort of what I call laptop classes are all, you know, sort of moaning and groaning and bumping their gums because they can't get, you know, the cheap au pair to come in and look after their children or, you know, the cheap tutor to come in and teach their kids French. I mean, I find the hypocrisy quite remarkable.
Or the cheap gardener to come round and cut their lawns for them. That's reality. The marketplace is the marketplace, and people will have to be paid the job, what the job's worth in the marketplace we're in. And without, I mean, people have realised that that was depressing wages in this country. And we need to move. I mean, obviously, the more you pay people, the better management that they get, and the faster the returns on automation to help improve the productivity of that job. We're going to need to move from a low-wage, low-productivity economy, which we've been in part due to unlimited migration of unskilled and semi-skilled workers from the EU for decades, into a high-wage, high-productivity economy. And it's okay saying, well, you know, every time we let someone into the country, they're not only a worker, they'll probably have dependents, and they're going to be consumers themselves. So they're going to need a house. They're going to need to go to the doctors. They're going to consume things. So the GDP of the country grows. But the real measure of the wealth of the country actually is the GDP per capita, how much we're generating per person. That's about the real wealth of the country. And that's been pretty static for a very long time. And that's what we're going to see increasing now.
OK, stay with us, Andrew, if you can. I've got a couple of other questions for you, a couple of other issues I want to raise with you. Andrew Bridges is here with us, Conservative MP for North West and Leicestershire. If you've got questions for him, put them to me. I'll put them to him. This is how democracy works. This is Talk Radio.
This is Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB+, and on the Talk Radio app. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. We're talking to Andrew Bridging, Conservative MP for North West Leicestershire. Now, Andrew, I've had a recurring request from a listener of ours who's down in Dungeness. Kim is her name, and she's been watching with some alarm the numbers of illegal migrants coming onto the beaches of the southeast coast of this country. Many of them are the people that we don't even know about. They just literally get off a boat, walk into town and never to be seen again. But she's apparently been trying to get out of Damien Collins, MP, what it is about the bill which is being put through, supposedly in this term. And she's getting the impression that it's not going through in this term, which is going to make it more difficult for these guys to come here. Is it the case that bill in question that the Home Office and Priti Patel are trying to put together is not going to be voted upon until basically the spring?
Well, I've spoken to colleagues about this. Obviously, the bill has to go through the Houses of Parliament. That's both houses.
Right.
I suspect that it's going to get held up in the House of Lords. And the suspicion is that we're not going to be able to pass it through both houses probably until February. So, yes, that is unfortunately democracy, and not everyone's on the side of the people, unfortunately.
No, I mean, what possible reason could the House of Lords have for holding it up?
The House of Lords is not under Conservative control. We do not have a majority of the votes in the House of Lords. You'll remember that Nick Clegg, when we were in the coalition government 2010 to 2015, in return for everything that the Conservative Party wanted or government wanted from him in the coalition, all he wanted was more members of the House of Lords. And I think there's something like 103 or 106 Liberal Democrats, completely out of proportion to their representation in the elected House. We have no majority, so it's going to be difficult.
Mm.
So it will be down to probably ping pong, and we'll keep debating it and rejecting it to their amendments.
Is there anything in the sort of the Queen's speech coming up that will give us some succour and hope that maybe the House of Lords could finally be properly actually reformed?
Well, I think Dominic Raab's laid his turf out quite rightly that we're going to need radical reform of the Convention on Human Rights. Basically, these people coming across the Channel, they are economic migrants. Yeah. They're in a safe country. They're choosing not to seek asylum or residency in France. And indeed, I can't believe they got to France without passing through other countries where they should have claimed asylum. Mm. They're just targeting the UK as the preferred destination. Well, I mean, Mike, if we gave in to what the Labour Party want, and probably the Liberal Democrats to a point, that anybody who in the world who wanted to come to this country should be allowed to come in, they'd only stop coming when we were in a worse state than the place they were leaving.
Well, exactly. And I mean, Boris Johnson made it very clear, I thought, in his conference speech, where he said, look, we're quite happy to have people come to this country and contribute to the economy, but we need to know, one, who they are, and two, why they're coming. I mean, it's not unreasonable, is it? I mean, it's like asking people to check into a hotel without showing any means of being able to pay for it.
And also, these people coming in boats, entering the UK illegally, they're completely undermining the people who play the game and apply through normal channels. It's basically like trying to queue jump. If it was up to me, I'd be putting forward legislation that says that anyone who enters the country illegally will never get UK citizenship and should be deported.
Yeah. I don't think there's any problem with that whatsoever. Final question is from Jane, who's texted into 87222. Mike, could you just please ask Andrew if he's congratulated Matt Hancock on his new job? Working for the UN, apparently.
Well, apparently he was offered the job, and he has considerable experience in government, and he certainly has. He would have some skills to offer Africa in terms of healthcare. He's clearly not going to be coming back into the government for a while, and I suppose it is a use if they think that he has the skills that they want. Why shouldn't he be allowed to go and do that?
Okay. Very well said, and very diplomatic of you, Andrew. Thank you very much indeed. Andrew Bridgen, MP there, Conservative MP for North West and Leicestershire, talking about a great many things, including the dinghies and the illegal migrants and the fact that this is probably not going to be solved anytime soon. Forget what Priti Patel said at the Conservative Party conference. This bill in question, which is supposed to make it much more difficult for them to come, is not going to even probably be put through Parliament until the spring. It's now October, so we're talking November, December, January, February, March. What's the betting? You'll be lucky to see it by Easter. That's a problem for me.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, you might have watched the football last night. You may or may not have bothered to watch the football last night. By all accounts, it wasn't a particularly brilliant game. It was England 1, Hungary 1. The highlight of it all, and probably not the right word that, probably the low light of it all, was the crowd. Because, as ever, the Hungarian fans came and caused a bit of trouble. Now, unfortunately for the Hungarian fans, I'm sure they're not all horrible, nasty people, but some of them definitely are. But one of the problems with what happened at Wembley last night was, as you can see if you're watching on our television screen right now, the police basically cowered in fear in front of a bunch of thugs from Hungary. You can see them walking backwards. You can see them sort of attempting to wave sticks at them. But basically, you can see the mob of Hungarian thugs marching upon the police, advancing upon the police, and basically chasing them out of the stadium to the point where they end up running down the back stairs. I mean, are the police in this country fit for purpose in any way, shape or form? They're very good at roughing up anti-vax demonstrations. They're very good at roughing up people that they don't like. But when it comes to actually fighting off football thugs, they don't seem to know quite what to do or how to do it. I mean, Cressida Dick, I'm sorry, she should be out anyway. Plank of the Week features Cressida Dick, you might not be surprised to know. And here's another example of how the Metropolitan Police in this country, in this day and age, wearing little caps and sort of waving, you know, nightsticks around, are just hopeless. I mean, if you can't go into a crowd of football hooligans and arrest a few people and drag them out and not really worrying particularly whether they hurt themselves on the way down the stairs, what is the point? What is the point, I ask you? A man that knows a thing or two about security at big events is Will Geddes. He's here with us now. Will, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
I don't know whether you've seen that video, Will, but it seems an incredible lack of perspicacity and a lack of kind of measure from the police. They don't seem to know how to deal with the crowd.
Yeah, this was a really interesting one. I've seen only a bit of footage on it, Mike, this morning. And from what I can see, very, very heavy-handed tactics. Quite often, certainly with the policing of games, you've got a number of different security components. You obviously have the police, you have stewards, and you also have the stadium security.
Right.
But what I could see here was, you know, you try and isolate a particular group if they're troublesome or they're going to cause some chaos. And you try and deal with it as discreetly as possible because, you know, you're going to have a lot of families that are going to games
right.
And they don't want to see this kind of violence going on and
no.
Certainly not batons being waved about and beating people up.
Right. But the point is that the police, surely, if they are going to do that, they need to make it happen. They need to make it work. They need to go, right, here's the thing. We're going to go in and get those four guys and we're going to pull them out. And they should have some strategy for doing that. What I don't want to see is the police effectively being chased away.
Yeah, no, that wasn't impressive, was it? I mean, certainly in terms of, you know, the police morale, it seems to be almost every day now, Mike. Mm. We're hearing a bad story about the police. And there's some serious wake-up calls here that they've got to deal with these things decisively. Right. They've got to go in, manage it, manage any kind of threat, and remove it from everybody else that could potentially be affected by it. So running away, not really the best tactic.
It really
is. It doesn't really inspire confidence.
It really doesn't, no. But listen, the real reason we got you on here this morning, Will, was to talk about what I find to be a quite fascinating case. A woman is apparently claiming that her next-door neighbour's camera doorbell scenario has somehow broken her data protection privacy law, and she's actually suing for some kind of compensation. She's basically saying that because his smart doorbell cameras show what she's doing, that somehow she is being a victim or being portrayed as a victim here, and it could mean that if you've got one of these cameras, you're in trouble.
Well, it means that you've got to be careful if you've got your cameras, and she may have a very good case. It seems that she does in this instance. However, I don't think necessarily the homeowner, the person who owns the cameras, was intending to invade on her privacy.
No.
But I'm not a huge fan of Internet of Things, Mike, as you know.
Mm.
I've talked about this with you both on the show, but also personally about it. And it's something that we've got to be very careful about. And when it comes to CCTV, whether it be your Ring doorbell, your Nest, or whether it be a hardwired sort of CCTV system, you've got to make sure that you don't intrude on other people's privacy.
Right.
Now, the problem with Ring is that you can listen live to it, as you can with most CCTV cameras,
right.
But especially with Ring, it's an affordable option. So she may have good reasons to feel that she is being overheard, eavesdropped, spied on, because it wasn't just the doorbell. This guy had a lot of Ring camera devices around his home
yeah.
And on the corners of it.
And so is it more about what he can hear rather than what he could see, or is it both?
It's both, Mike.
Right.
It's both. So, you know, if you are putting CCTV around your house and that, you know, maybe to protect your car as it was that this particular individual says it was in
right.
His instance, you've got to make sure that the view of the camera doesn't intrude or invade into other people's property. So certainly not looking into other people's windows,
right.
Not even encroaching into their gardens or their property line. And, you know, one of the things that you have to be considerate to is if they're kind of covert or they're hidden cameras, you need to have some kind of sticker in your window or signage that just alerts people. And I mean, and that in itself is a good deterrent, certainly to any kind of criminal.
Yes, no, I think that's true. Because the facts of the matter here is that a judge has actually found that John Woodward's use of his cameras did break data laws and did amount to harassment of this woman who happens to be a doctor. And she claims she was forced to move out. But she could be getting £100,000 out of this.
Well, she could be, yeah. But I think this is kind of a case example which this judge wants to push forward. You know, these Ring devices, which are now owned by Amazon, are incredibly and increasingly popular. They're very easy, very cheap, and they do act as a very good security measure. I'm not dissuading people using them. I think they are smart and they are good. However, it's about misuse, and it's also about ensuring that you are not using it beyond the requirements or the agenda of why you've installed them.
No, quite, absolutely right. So, I mean, I dare say there'll be a few ambulance-chasing lawyers who may or may not be known to you and I who will be jumping on this particular bandwagon.
Yeah, every possibility. So, I mean, if any of the viewers and the listeners have actually got Ring doorbells, or if they've got those peripheral devices, those additional cameras, not the ones just on their doors, but the cameras which are on the outside of their buildings, have a good look at those cameras through your live view on your app, on your device, whether that be your computer or your phone for that matter, and have a look and see whether it is intruding into your neighbour's space. If it is, then you need to get a step ladder out this evening. And just adjust it and make sure, or even just mention to your neighbours and say, look, I'm really conscious I'm not intruding on your privacy. Right. I will adjust my cameras accordingly. But make sure you write that in an email so you've got an audit trail to show that you are doing the best you possibly can.
Exactly right. And presumably the manufacturers of these devices will perhaps think about how they now sell them, because presumably they're going to have to talk people through all that and say, look, we're going to have to set them up in such a way that you don't see something you shouldn't, or that you don't lay yourself open for this kind of problem.
Yeah, no, I haven't actually been on Ring's website this morning, but I would imagine, being a big enough company owned by Amazon, that they will have a section, albeit it's probably not that easy to find, which talks about, in the installation process, the things you've got to be considerate for. Now, that will adjust and alter around the world. We have very different privacy laws, for example, Mike, here, than we do in the United States, as you know. So we need to adapt it accordingly. So just be sensible. I mean, for companies that are using Ring, particularly the cameras, which are the peripherals, not just the doorbell, you know, they need to have signage up. Certainly if they have visitors to that building that says we have CCTV in operation. We're kind of blind to it these days, but in most places that have it, there is a legal requirement to have that in place.
Okay, good stuff. Will, thank you very much indeed for your help. We'll get his security expert there. If you've got one of these cameras, you might want to check it out and make sure that your neighbour's not going to hit you up for a £100,000 bill, because that would be a very unfortunate Christmas present that would not come early or be very welcome, would it?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tonya Buxton is here. Very good morning,
good morning
to you.
Good morning to you.
How
too.
The devil are you?
I'm good.
And I'm feeling feisty today.
I'm uplifted by your words.
Good.
I feel like I'm ready to do a positive battle.
Let's. You know what? Lawrence Fox was here yesterday, right? He came in to do planks, which he'll be back doing very shortly. And I said, and we went for a drink afterwards. I said, it feels like we're in the resistance.
Yeah.
It feels like you're fighting this kind of battle every day against the doom and the gloom and the people who say that, well, you don't know anything. What do you know? I mean, you're always getting, aren't you?
Oh, my goodness.
Why are you talking about stuff?
Why am I?
You're just a chef.
I'm just a cook. What do I know? Nothing to do with the fact that I've got to the grand old age of 53. I have four children. I've had four different types of jobs, which included being a school teacher in Tottenham. All the information I read more than anything. One of the main things is, you know, if I was going to go in for a knee operation, Mike, I would get a consultant to tell me, a couple of consultants.
Yeah.
And from what the two consultants says, I would make my decisions about my life, my children, my body.
Right.
We can't do that anymore.
No.
You have to have a degree in science, and it's got to be the right science as
Yeah, but the weird thing is it's people who don't have any of that, but who say, well, you have to listen to the experts. And you go, well, which experts are they?
Exactly.
Like Neil Ferguson, who actually studied physics and is now teaching us about viruses, which he knows nothing about, teaching us about medicine, which he knows nothing about, making rules about how we should behave, which he also knows nothing about.
I completely agree with you. And the thing is, when this report came out, the health science, health whatever committee
whatever.
Report came out, you know, you're reading it and you're trying really, really hard not to let your blood pressure go up because it's a complete whitewash. Mm. They've completely ignored what has caused the huge amount of damage that's happened, not just in Britain, but across the world, apart from a few places, you know, like Sweden, Florida and Texas. They've completely ignored the kind of the worldwide evidence that shows that lockdowns do not work.
Right.
It was lockdowns that did the damage. And they've not said that. And the whole British media, apart from this station and a couple of television stations, one particular television station, have not asked any of the questions apart from, why didn't you lock down earlier?
Yeah.
I mean, that question...
That's their only conclusion, isn't it?
That question makes me want to just go insane. I mean, don't you understand? That's what did the damage.
Yeah.
The people that are dying now of underdiagnosed and untreated cancers and a whole plethora of illnesses... Mm. They are dying because of lockdown.
Yeah.
I know parents, as you know, some of the people that when I go on the protest with, are mothers who have lost their children through suicide during lockdown.
Mm.
Lockdown caused that, not
COVID. And they
COVID.
Talk about mental health as an issue for teenagers as if the two things are not connected. Oh, yeah, we've got an epidemic of problematic mental health with teenagers. Well, why do you think that might be?
Oh, my goodness. The
you know?
Tsunami of mental health that we have across the board, adults, but in particular our young, and not just teenagers, because the teenagers are ones that you're seeing now.
Yeah.
This has mentally affected young children, and we won't see the effects of that for years.
Right.
And lockdown did that.
Mm.
Lockdown did that because lockdown made people stay at home. It made abused women have to stay inside with their abusers.
Yeah.
Abused children have to stay in and have no safe space. They had to stay home with people that were abusing or neglecting or treating them cruelly. Lockdown did it.
Mm.
Why has no one asked that question?
I know.
Why has there not been a cost-benefit analysis about lockdown?
Yes. And there really has to be, and we'll just have to keep asking for it and keep pushing for it, because when the real inquiry happens, because this is not the real one,
absolutely.
That's when they are going to have to actually address all
they
that.
They have to answer these questions. They can't just keep whitewashing everything. They really can't. And you know that I am in a situation where I have two sides of the family. I have my mum, who is now just tumbling into dementia, and lockdown did that.
Is she still having treatment for cancer?
My mother-in-law is
in
hospital. Yeah, my mother-in-law on the other side is yes, she's still having treatment. And all of this, all the suffering that she's having at the moment is purely due to the fact that her doctor was one of the really, really negligent GPs.
Yeah.
There's some amazing GPs, and I know amazing GPs,
yes.
So this is not all at them, but there are some really vile, negligent, awful GPs.
Yes.
And she is in this predicament because her GP would not see her for 6 months.
I had
just
a call
having
yesterday.
Phone consultations.
I had a call yesterday from a man who was talking, he didn't want to reveal exactly who it was that was his relative, but it was his relative's child, who was born basically with a hole in the heart, and they didn't know for a year because the child was never examined.
Unbelievable.
Right? And now the child has to have undergo open heart surgery. He's got three holes in his heart, which he's had for a year. and he's lucky he's still alive.
Very lucky to be alive. And it's just horrific the case that you can't get seen. And even now, you go into hospitals and you're only allowed to go and visit someone. It doesn't matter how sick they are or what's going on. You're only allowed to go in and visit them twice a week. Mm. So they are sitting alone and they are getting successively worse because the whole thing about, especially when you've got an illness like something like cancer or something, you need visitors to rise your spirits, to give you hope. And you can only have someone visit you for 2 hours twice a week.
Yeah.
And it's got to be the same person as well.
A nominated individual.
Where is this coming from? Is COVID not flu?
Right.
Why are they continuing
this?
And this is where, you know, when I've had people within the NHS, so people working on the ground within the NHS, I've come across some absolutely amazing people. But whoever's coming up with this middle... I sent a very imploring letter to the matron of this particular ward. And I just got a standard, nope, it's COVID, this is what we've got to do, we've got to save lives.
Yeah.
But you're killing someone I know by this process.
And also this still nonsensical kind of, and this is far less important, but yet still for the country's sake important, you know, civil servants who are all working from home.
Oh, outrageous.
I was at a do last night in Canary Wharf talking to some old colleagues from the newspaper business, right? And I'm not going to mention the paper, but they're basically, they have said, the management of the company have said, we're never having you back in the office, ever. And I'm going, sorry?
What?
What, you're going to run a newspaper, which is already in pretty serious decline,
yep,
without having anybody here? And they've just accepted it, and they're going, oh, it's quite good, really. And I'm like, what? Why wouldn't... I mean, newspapers, newsrooms, I don't know if you've ever been in one.
No, but they've
some of the greatest places in that you will ever spend time in, you know? I mean, in the 80s, they were pretty raucous and pretty, you know, crazy. And it was great fun. And everybody had a great time. And it's probably slightly less good. But you, how can you run an organisation that's about publications and about media and about communications
without being there,
being in the same room with
each other? It's an insanity.
It's mad.
But so these big companies are doing it because obviously they're saving money on rents and things like that, but it is to the detriment of everything else. It's to the detriment of the people that are not going in as well.
Yeah.
I know some people think, oh, it's great, I don't have to get on the tube and I don't have to go to work and whatever. But in the long run, they will suffer too.
No, I walked through the sort of the bottom level of Canary Wharf yesterday. You know, there's a Waitrose at one end and then there's a sort of, I can't remember what's at the other end, a restaurant. And an awful lot of it is just gone.
It's shut.
The shop fronts that were open, which are now just covered over.
But it was a prime site for restaurants, I know.
Because
we were looking with the Real Greek to go to Canary Wharf. It was really difficult to try and get a site there.
Yeah.
And they were prime rents, prime places to be for restaurants.
Because there was something like, when I was working there back in 2005, there was about 80,000 people working there every day.
Absolutely.
Right? A lot of money changing hands, all people who were making pretty good, you know,
livings,
pounds.
Yep.
And, you know, lots of people spending money, lots of people hanging around in the evenings. You know, it was really vibrant. Last night, it was like a dead zone.
Yeah. And that's what lockdowns have done. Done that. COVID didn't do that. COVID is a virus which is now endemic and it's kind of burning itself out.
Right.
But lockdowns did that.
And do you know what I do now? Whenever I meet more and more people, they all say, oh yeah, I had it. They've all had it. Yeah. Everybody's had it.
Everyone's had it.
But you're not dead, are you?
No.
And hardly any, you know, and I was talking to my sister who lives in America and they have exactly the same rate of death as we do. 0.2% of the population. 0.2.
As Sunita Gupta said, and the people from the Great Barrington Declaration said, this is it's a tsunami. It's going to get who it's going to get. You can't lock and hide away from, it's not the bogeyman that's going to go away. You can't lock doors and hide away from it.
Right.
To a certain extent, the vaccine has helped with those that are vulnerable and those that are elderly.
Yeah.
But as they always said, there should have been herd immunity for the young. Most of the young have had it. So this is why I don't understand this persistent blackmail-y way of trying to get the young to get vaccinated.
Well, the latest,
they just
which I'm
don't
sure
need it.
Has riled you as much as it's riled me, Sajid Javid, who's also found himself on the planks list this week, urging parents to get their kids vaccinated because nobody's getting it done. Only 11% of children are now under 15 have been vaccinated because nobody wants it.
No, because don't need it.
Right.
They do not need
it. But he's hinting that, well, if you don't do it, then, you know, they might not be able to continue with face-to-face schooling. Absolute rubbish.
It's just this constant, utter, disgusting fear-mongering that we're getting. Like you said, with the ports and everything, you know, it's keeping people in this constant state of fear where their anxiety is up, their adrenaline is up, and therefore you're just more malleable. You're more controllable when you're in a state of fear because you're, and I know this, And I'm not a doctor, but I know that your hypothalamus then would always go for safety rather than happiness.
Right.
And because you keep people in a constant state of fear, they'll always go for safety.
Right.
So whatever someone's dangling in front of you as this is the safe thing to do, that's how they control you and that's how they make you do it. Well, you know, I'm standing here right now and telling you, you're not controlling me anymore. I'm fed up with it. And mothers and parents across the board, we've had enough.
Yeah.
Our children need to go back to school. It's got nothing to do with being vaccinated. Again, this report, you know, doesn't even talk about the fact that those, like my children, who are at state school were completely let down by the education system. Now, my brother's kids and other people that I know who had private education, well, they were at it. They were Zooming every day, 6 hours a day, doing the right thing. My children were lucky to get on hold.
No, the first part of last year, when from sort of say March to the summer, you know, my kids didn't get given anything to
nothing.
Do. The teachers were sort of like, well, you know, if you want to do some homework, you can. Oh, really? Well, you think a 14-year-old's going to go, oh, yeah, I volunteered to do some homework. No.
Well, when I asked our school why they weren't Zooming in like the private schools said, they said it was health and safety. And I remember sending an email back saying, you have lost your minds or you think I'm an idiot. If that is the reason that you're giving, that you're not regularly Zooming in. How can it happen in private education? Their education continued and they progressed. And yet state school education, it did not continue. And it has had a massive drop down.
Of course it has.
And lockdowns are to blame to that. And our government is to blame for that.
Yeah.
And we're not having it anymore. I'm not having this dangle, right? You've got to do as I say. You've got to vaccinate your child, whether they need it or not, whether it may or may not do them harm. You've got to do it if you want them to be educated. Mm. Well, no.
No.
I'm just not having it
anymore.
No,
I'm with you. Absolutely right. And also, you think about our lives and, you know, you and I have lived reasonably well and long, but somebody who's only 15 hasn't lived that long, and so a year and a half out of their life is huge, massive, you know?
Absolutely massive, especially at these pivotal times, you know, when you're kind of just getting into being a teenager, 15, 16, 17. These are times that you mix with a lot of people, you kind of find out what your character is, you know, you probably have your first kiss during then or something like that, and none of that happened. None of that happened for our children.
No, I mean, I said to my 17-year-old last summer, I said, go and hang around on the street corner and drink some cider, you know, go have some fun, you know, just get out. But he was kind of reticent, because he hadn't been anywhere for a long time.
Parents like us, we thankfully are not succumbing. We haven't been pushed by the fear.
No.
There are many parents, though, who are so frightened because, as we said, you know, the propaganda that was done, 330 million spent by the government to make people frightened, has had a huge effect on these parents. So these parents are more fearful. They're giving that fear to their children, and it's just continuing.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, I'm like, go on, you know, just get out, get on with it.
Because that's the kind of parent that you want to have as a child.
Yes, absolutely.
But as you say, there are so many who don't have that confidence even, or they don't have the ability to push back.
But they've had a good job
done
on
them. Sure. Yeah, they're not sure if they can. And, you know, some people also will tell them that they're terrible. I mean, I remember when they went back to primary school, I think, it must have been, I guess, September of last year. And all the I just happened to drive past this primary school one day on chucking out time, and all the parents were standing in the playground waiting to pick up their kids with masks on.
Insanity.
And you're going, you're outside.
Yeah.
And it turns out the school had asked them to do it.
Again, what rights does the school have to do this? This is the other thing that we were talking about. You know, there's a lot of schools and council health officials who are taking it upon themselves to decree what goes on in schools at the moment. Some are talking about reintroducing masks or reintroducing bubbles or sending people home when they're not sick. But this is local council area. They've become inflated by the power that they've been given, and it needs to be culled.
Yes, it really does. Because this report also does not really properly represent the rest of the country. It represents people in the Westminster bubble who have all had money all the way through, who have all been paid, who probably didn't do very much because they were zoomed in whenever they felt like it. And it hasn't in any way encapsulated the feelings of the nation.
Not at all.
Because we know for a fact, I think it's, 70% of people actually continue to work.
Yes.
Not at home, but actually doing their proper job.
And mainly serve.
Yeah.
Serve those people, those elitists that stayed home and Zoomed and did things like that. So those, you know, funny how, you know, COVID doesn't affect a delivery driver or a takeaway driver.
Or a supermarket worker.
No,
I don't think there's hardly any cases of people who were working in supermarkets getting COVID.
Absolutely.
Hardly any.
None at all.
And
so
then
I
don't know if you heard Vaughan Gethin, the Welsh health guy, who was on with Julia the other morning, and she was saying, you know, please show me the evidence why you're introducing vaccine passports. He couldn't do it because there is no evidence.
There is absolutely no evidence.
And you know what he said? He said, well, we know that, nightclubs are places where COVID spreads. And I'm going, well, hang on, they've all been shut.
Yes, how do they know?
So how do you know that? And if somebody's vaccinated, you can't stop them spreading it anyway. So what's the point?
No, vaccine passports are the most horrific thing to come into play at the moment. And anybody who's playing that game is going to regret it greatly.
Yes.
Not just for themselves, but for their children and for the way this country is continuing. Vaccine passports are an anathema and they must never, ever be introduced. And we must stand up as people. You know, this kind of lethargy that people have, well, it's all right. Oh, why not? Might as well. I've been vaxxed, so I might as well. It's got nothing to do with whether you've been vaxxed or you've not been vaxxed. They must not come into play. They are dangerous, they are dictatorial, and they will damage our society as we know and love to live it.
Yes.
This must not happen.
It must not happen, and it's for us and others. And I think actually the children's vaccinations was the tipping point. I mean, Laura Dossel was here yesterday, and we kind of thought and said at the same time, people just said no. That's the line.
It.
The line is now crossed, and we're not going over it.
Yeah, and actually, not only are we not going over that children's line, we're actually bringing it all the way back now, all the way back. You know, we let you push and nudge us too far. And now we're pulling it back. We've had enough.
Yeah.
We want to go back to pre-COVID times. That is the life that I cherished, being a British person, living in Great Britain. That's the life I cherish. And
yes,
I will not give an inch of it anymore. I am fed up of it. I'm fed of being bullied and pushed about and lied to.
Yeah.
Lies, the lies and the hypocrisy have sickened me to my stomach.
Mm.
And I'm ready to take battle now. In a positive way.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not actually feeling, during lockdown and what was going on, I was very low.
You were.
Gosh, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I felt, you know, I was having these kind of night tremors where I'd be walking around the house going, what's going on? What's going on? I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
It was really affecting me. But actually, I'm galvanized now. This is what I will tolerate. I will not tolerate being bullied and pushed around. I will not tolerate you doing things to my children that I don't approve of. I will not tolerate vaccine passports. And I'm going to stand tall. I'm hoping that the nation, this fantastic nation that we live in, is going to join me and just say that we voted you in.
Yes.
We tell you what to
do. Exactly.
Enough is enough.
Exactly right. And you mentioned your mother earlier. She's in Cyprus, I presume, still.
Yes.
How are things there? Because you were a bit disappointed when you weren't you?
I'm really, really disappointed in what's going on in Cyprus. Cyprus is a show your papers place. You can't go anywhere. They've bullied the people so much, because what they do is they fine them. So, you know, if I want to go into my friend's restaurant and not show my papers, as it were, he will get a substantial fine, or she will get a substantial fine. So it's emotional blackmail as well. They're so frightened. They've lost so much money. They haven't had the tourism that they need to make them survive.
Right.
And on top of that, they're getting these draconian fines from these COVID marshals that are everywhere.
Right.
I mean, this whole thing about people spying on people, there's some Stasi kind of nation way of living.
Yeah.
It's not how we live here. And it's not how the Greeks live. It's not how it's done. But this...
No, they're very tactile people, the Greeks.
So tactile,
right?
Absolutely. You know, it's the way we do things. But, you know, I will have to go over again and see if my parents are okay. They're not in a good way. And I have to go and see and check that they're all right.
Yeah.
And I'd like to make a stand and say, right, I'm not going. I don't agree with this. But what can you do in
that
sense?
Well, you have to go. I mean, I'm going to go see my mother at Christmas, by the looks of it now. We're going to try and have a sort of big family reunion, which will be fantastic.
Lovely.
You know? And I'm hoping that by the time that comes, there won't be any of this rubbish about testing this, testing that.
There won't
that.
Be if we stand
they
up to it.
They keep doing away with different, you know, suddenly now you don't have to quarantine if you're coming from a red disc country. Well, why? Why did you have to do it before?
Power.
Why are we not doing it anymore?
Control.
Huh?
That's all it is.
Every single rule that is in that report and every single criticism of those rules is wrong. Because the rules should never have been there.
Should never. And also still, look at what's going on now. You know, there are certain places that are mass mandating you again.
Yeah.
You know, and a little bit bully.
Yeah.
A little bit bully with the way that they ask you.
It is.
Because I will now no longer say I'm exempt.
No.
I will not wear a mask.
Right.
I have read the science.
That's it.
I have had COVID.
Yeah.
I will not wear
and
a
even,
mask.
Even
full
the
stop.
Scientists are saying there's no point.
Absolutely no
right?
point at all. So
what's
why,
that all about?
What is that about?
I don't
what's
know.
Happening? It's
I wish
about
I knew.
Power and control. That's all it is.
I wish I knew. We've finished again.
No way.
I know.
Had so much to talk about.
Well, you want to mention anything quickly before we start?
I just wanted to mention a little bit about this blackfishing thing.
Okay.
With Jessie Nelson, that
right.
all the people that were coming out and hashtag be kind to her when she talked about the fact that she was almost suicidal and she has such issues with her body confidence and the way she looks and all these people that came up and said, you know, her mental health is really important, are the same people that are now saying that she's blackfishing, which is a new word. I think it's a new made-up word, which means that if you try to...
Because I've heard of catfishing.
No, this is blackfishing.
Right.
And what it means is, so if you've got a tan and you plait your hair, then you're culturally appropriating somebody else's culture. And in this video that she did with Nicki Minaj, you know, she's got plaited hair and she's quite tanned in it, and they're saying that she's, you know, trying to pretend to be a black person, which is, and so it's a racist thing that she's doing. Now, I've had enough of this, you know.
It's
got to stop, you know. How you dress and what you do with your hair and whether you like a tan or don't like a tan has got nothing to do with racism.
No.
And this whole kind of looking to be offended all the time is really, again, another thing that's very, very bad for our kids' mental health.
Absolutely.
They've got to stop it.
They have got to stop it. We shouldn't be letting these people run our lives at all. Time to just say no, as Nancy Reagan used to say.
Yeah.
Tonya Buxton, great to see you. I'll see you a bit later on this afternoon, but we'll say nothing about that because that's a secret.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, we've been talking to Ben Habib for a very long time about Northern Ireland, because ever since Brexit happened, which was on the January 31st of last year, seems a much longer time ago than that, doesn't it? We've still been struggling with the issue of Northern Ireland. Nobody's been quite sure exactly what to do. The sausage war started and finished pretty quickly. There's no real shortage of anything in Northern Ireland. Somehow, day-to-day living has been okay. There's been no particular tensions in terms of the paramilitaries. There's been no particular bad things happening. But there has always been this kind of cloud slightly hanging over the horizon. Let's talk to Ben to see if he's in any way uplifted or perhaps even positive about what may happen. Ben, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Now, I've been railing against the doommongers and the naysayers all morning, so I'm sort of hoping that you might be joining me in this endeavour and telling me that this finally is the EU doing the right thing.
I am afraid I'm going to disappoint you, Mike.
What a shame.
I think Lord Frost at last is saying the right thing.
Yeah.
He is saying that the ECJ has to be removed from the protocol. And actually, in that one step, if he can stay firm on that one demand, if he can remove the ECJ from having supremacy over the protocol and therefore 800 laws and regulations in Northern Ireland, I think we would have won the battle of the protocol. But that is not what we're going to get from the EU today. What we're going to get from the EU today is actually an attempt to further increase their influence over Northern Ireland. And they're going to do it effectively by gilding the lily, pretending that they're allowing more stuff into Northern Ireland from Great Britain, but actually capturing Northern Ireland by giving it representation, as he's indicated they would, representation in the EU itself.
Mm.
And by doing that, they will justify the capture of Northern Ireland. That's what this is all about. Let's just get one thing straight. This is not about people in Northern Ireland starving.
Mm.
People in Northern Ireland will get their food. The question is, will they get their food from Great Britain, their medicines from Great Britain, or are they going to get their food and medicines from Ireland and the European Union?
Mm.
What the EU wants is to pivot Northern Ireland increasingly away from Great Britain, looking south and looking towards the EU for its long-term future. And the game here is to take Northern Ireland over. It's to reunify the island of Ireland without a democratic vote, effectively punishing the United Kingdom for having the temerity to leave the European Union.
Right.
That's what this battle is all about.
And the whole point, really, Ben, of leaving the European Union was so that we could not be punished by the European Union anymore, because we were no longer, you know, part of their little game and part of their little world. So no matter what they threatened us with, actually, we would just go, well, thanks very much. We'll see you later.
Well, that was the idea. Unfortunately, the devil is in the detail. And the protocol effectively allowed the European Union to take over part of our country. That's what's happened.
Right.
And now we're tussling over Northern Ireland in a tug of war with the EU. And anything that comes out of the EU today is going to be designed to increase their influence over Northern Ireland, to turn Northern Ireland's head away from Great Britain, to turn businesses away from Great Britain and towards the EU.
And the problem, I would have thought, for them doing that is that at the moment, if I'm not mistaken, most of the incoming sort of trade and most of the incoming food, certainly, and goods and services is coming from the UK, isn't it?
It is. I mean, the vast majority of trade for Northern Ireland, 65% of it or whatever, is with Great Britain. And but, you know, businesses won't wait around for our government to get its act together. Businesses in Northern Ireland will want to get on and be profitable. And so they will go to the nearest port at which they can get what they need. And if our government can't get a grip of this border down the Irish Sea, businesses in Northern Ireland will shift their supply chains. You know, it's no accident. People have talked a lot about Article 16. It's no accident that there are three reasons pursuant to which we as a country have the right to invoke Article 16 and suspend the protocol. And those three reasons are societal damage to Northern Ireland, economic damage to Northern Ireland, but one very important third reason, and that is if supply chains for Northern Ireland begin to shift away from Great Britain. So when that protocol was negotiated, our government could see that supply chains could be changed, it could vary, could be moved away from Great Britain to Northern to Ireland. And the reason we fretted about it, and the reason it's in Article 16 as a right, giving us the right to suspend the protocol, is because it's through that shifting supply chain that they will economically capture Northern Ireland. Now, Lord Frost has repeatedly said that grounds already exist for invoking Article 16.
Right.
But basically, Lord Frost has said, we have the right as a country to invoke it because Northern Ireland is being economically damaged by this arrangement, and yet we haven't invoked it. It's a gross dereliction of duty on the part of our ministers.
And so their kind of suggestion or their insistence of keeping, you know, sort of legal links, if you like, with Northern Ireland so that the judges of the EU can still have jurisdiction over it. I mean, what does that actually mean in practice?
In practice, that means that the laws and regulations of Northern Ireland are not the same as the rest of the United Kingdom.
Right.
British citizens in Northern Ireland do not answer up to the British Supreme Court. They answer up to the European Court of Justice, and that effectively Northern Ireland is not part of the UK. Now, I don't want to be moved to hyperbole, but what's happened here is an annexation of Northern Ireland. It's the takeover of part of the United Kingdom by the European Union through the back door.
Yes. And that can't be allowed, can it?
It shouldn't be allowed. You know, we went to war over this kind of thing back in 1939.
Absolutely right. And I mean, in the meantime, I suppose you've also got the French who are rattling their sabres quite a lot, talking about the fishing wars and trying to get support from other countries in the EU to somehow fight Britain over our reluctance to give them the rights to fish in our waters with lots of little boats.
Yeah. And, you know, the French are a real problem at the moment. I think our relationship with France has never been brilliant, but it's at an all-time, I can't say an all-time low. We haven't come to fisticuffs yet, but it is at a very low ebb. And think about our relationship with France for a second. This is a country that's taken £200 million off the UK in the last couple of years to try to curb its illegal immigrant flow to the UK and done nothing about it. Its police have stood by while thousands of illegal immigrants have crossed the North Sea to enter our country. This is a country that actually has 800 of the 1,700 fishing licenses that have been issued to EU member states and is kicking up a real stink, threatening to cut electricity off to Jersey just because there's a dispute over 35 licenses. Let's get this into proportion. They have 800 fishing licenses that come into our territorial water with their massive boats, take what they like, not checked by British Coast Guard or anything, take it back to France, and yet here they are threatening to cut electricity off to Jersey because we won't grant them 35 licenses.
Right. And what are they paying for these licenses that they've got?
No, they have a right to these licenses under the terms of the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. What these fishermen effectively have to do is to evidence that they used to fish in those waters before the United Kingdom left the EU. And there are 35 small boats which can't prove it. And so that's where the dispute is. But they've got 800 boats altogether, Mike, coming into our waters. And it's the big boats that come in, indiscriminately kill our fish. I don't know if you know about the sort of the way they electrify fish in our waters, but they'll put an electrical charge down, which will kill everything in one square mile. They talk about the need to protect the environment. What do you think it does to the United Kingdom's biggest natural resource if you electrocute everything in one square mile? It's an utter environmental disaster.
Well, it's horrendous. I mean, that, and I don't know if you've seen that documentary, Seaspiracy, which was put together and produced by, or executive produced by Dale Vince. It's extraordinary what is done to the sea. You don't realise quite how big these factory boats are. And not only do they dredge and or electrocute every single fish in the water, but they drag the net across the seabed, which also completely destroys everything that is on the seabed.
Absolutely. It's gratuitous, indiscriminate killing of the United Kingdom's greatest natural resource. So if the Prime Minister is so keen on net zero, can he please get a grip of fishing? Because that's a natural resource which used to be in abundance and could be in abundance again if we just develop the courage to tell these French fishermen and other EU member states to get out of our water. Remember, Mike, we're talking about our territorial water.
Exactly. And I don't know whether this is a bit of a stupid question, but why can't they just go a bit further south and start fishing in the Spanish waters? Is there no fish down there?
Well, the British waters are the richest. That's why they're so keen on coming into our water. Yeah. But by the way, their plundering is not restricted to just British waters. They have done deals like this with African states where they have denuded the coast, the water off the coast of a number of African states, where they've just treated them with absolutely no respect, fishing them dry, if you like. No, the EU is a mercantilist trader. It doesn't want a level, all this nonsense about a level playing field is just that nonsense.
Yeah.
What they want is, and I'm going to use an evocative word again, forgive me, what they want to do is rape their counterparties in trade. That's how they see it. This isn't about balanced trade with the EU. This is about the detriment of the United Kingdom for the benefit of the European Union. And that applies to these African states as well.
Absolutely right. And they are a sort of insatiable beast in that way, aren't they? They just need more and more and more. Because as they look around the EU, particularly to the east, where Poland have now had a ruling that their laws are actually more important than anything that comes out of Brussels, which is interesting. They've got quite a loose grip on quite a lot of that part of it, haven't they?
They have. Well, even within the EU, they've been feasting. Germany, if you like, is kind of feasted on these peripheral countries. Poland, as it happens, has been a net beneficiary of EU funding. It receives about 100 billion a year. It receives about 100 billion every 7 years in their 7-year multi-financial framework budget. But, if you look at the way trade balances are spread across the European Union, Germany is by far the biggest exporter. And the importers are all the countries that are in financial trouble that we know about. You know, Portugal, Spain, Italy, Greece, obviously, famously, but also France. Germany has sucked the lifeblood out of these countries. And Poland is well aware of what's gone on. And that's why the Polish courts are stamping their authority now. And remember, Poland is a country that spent 40 years behind the Iron Curtain. It knows what it's like to be a small cog in an otherwise uncaring supranational entity.
Right.
It will not allow that to happen to its own country again.
Absolutely. And just to finish up on Lord Frost, what's the sort of time frame you're expecting, Ben, on this? Are you seeing something happening properly this week, you think?
Well, it's interesting. We were due to have our appeal. We're running this judicial review of the protocol in the Irish courts. We were due to have an appeal on Monday. And the Irish Appeals Court deferred the hearing pending, I'm told, very odd, pending what emerges from the European Union this week.
Oh, yeah.
So clearly, the Irish courts are expecting something big. I think it will be big, but I don't think it's going to move the United Kingdom in the direction that any unionist would want. It's going to be a move towards nationalism within Ireland. And Lord Frost now needs to come up with a definitive timetable pursuant to which he will invoke Article 16. You know, the Prime Minister and Lord Frost have repeatedly said, we won't hesitate to invoke Article 16. All they've done is hesitate. All they've done is encourage the EU to believe that we don't have the courage ourselves to invoke that article. The best way to negotiate now, Mike, is invoke Article 16, suspend the protocol, and then have earnest discussions about how we get rid of the European Court of Justice and reclaim part of the United Kingdom.
Yes, I think you're right. It just has to be done. We have to just take it rather than waiting for them to give us a bit by the looks of things. Ben, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Ben Habib, businessman, chairman of Brexit Watch, of course. Also a man who has a great deal of interest in the Northern Irish situation, not least because of a lawsuit that he filed to try and make sure that the UK did not allow Northern Ireland to disappear off into some kind of nether state of neither here nor there, which didn't really begin to cover what was supposed to happen after January 31st, 2020, when we left the European Union. After all, you can't just leave Northern Ireland hanging. So now the time has come, as Ben says, probably to invoke Article 16 and just take it all back. Simple as that.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.